From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet, and you're listening to Idaho Matters. Every week, we take a look at the latest going on with COVID-19, as well as other public health issues. And this week, there are some concerning developments around avian influenza and a new outbreak of Marburg virus. So how much of a threat are these new outbreaks, and are we prepared to deal with them? Plus, a new study says a healthy lifestyle could lower your risk of long COVID. Joining us today to talk more about all of this is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. And remember, if you have questions about public health, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So let's start with the avian flu, with avian influenza. What's going on with this?
So what's happening with this, and people are seeing this already play out when they try to go to the store to buy eggs. We already knew prices were increasing due to the overall economy issues, but recently they've gone way up in price because of the fact that large numbers of chickens and other poultry are dying either because of avian flu or because they were culled because of exposure to avian flu. So, you know, this is always a concern, but what has made it more of a concern is that it's not just in poultry now. It has spread to wild birds. What's the significance of that? Well, the significance is wild birds are migratory. So they take the virus with them to other areas. And then it got even more concerning because generally, while this virus circulates in the bird population, it doesn't extend far beyond it typically. And this year, we have had a huge number of infections in mammals. So we've had it. In fact, there were bears in Montana that got it, and we've had four bears die, at least that I know of. We've had it infect dolphin populations, fox, raccoon, all kinds of other animals. Probably most concerning to me and people who are experts in this field is the fact that there was an outbreak of avian influenza in a mink farm in Spain. And so listeners might think, well, why do we care about that? Well, we care about that because although mink don't look anything like humans, they actually are one of the best human models of our upper respiratory tract. And what we saw with COVID is that it infected, it was transmitted from humans to minks. It circulated wildly in the mink population on these mink farms, killed high numbers of minks, and then the mink were able to mutate the virus and transmit it back to humans. So now the concern is this virus going to go through the changes that would allow it to infect humans? It has infected small numbers of humans in the past, mm-hmm. particularly those who work with these birds, but it hasn't been successful at transmitting from human to human. It usually just infects a human and then ends. But we have to, just like we've seen with COVID, we, you know, all these opportunities that we give the viruses to continue to propagate, we're increasing the chances that they learn how to spread better.
Okay, so now I want to talk about this Marburg virus. I have read just a little about this, enough to be highly concerned if it were to continue to spread. So first off, Dr. Pate, what is it? Where is it? So let's start with that.
So Marburg virus, you'll remember that on this show in the past, I have indicated that while a lot of people aren't particularly worked up about COVID, and we could certainly debate whether they should be, but what I have stressed is that we need to be planning for future pandemics because I could name a dozen viruses off the top of my head with mortality rates that are manyfold higher than COVID, perhaps 30 to 70 times more fatality rates. This is one of the top of my list that would be horrible. It has a case fatality rate. That is, if you get the Marburg hemorrhagic fever, the mortality rate has been reported as high as 88%. So we're talking about something way different than COVID. It is also an RNA virus. And so, like we've talked about before, RNA viruses mutate much more higher frequency than DNA viruses. So that's a concern. But this virus has caused an outbreak in Equatorial Guinea, as you mentioned, and it came to our attention on February 7th, 8th that about 25 people had been infected. We only have confirmatory testing in very few, but it's hard to test for. But we believe 25 people infected, and already as of the 13th. 9 of them had died, giving us a case fatality rate of 36%, but it hasn't played out yet. So many more people may die, unfortunately. That is of concern. But now, as of yesterday, we've learned that now there are 2 cases suspected in a neighboring country, Cameroon. And so I think that this virus is transmitted in a completely different way than COVID. This is through more close contact, direct contact, surfaces, those kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But we still have to be very concerned that, again, if we don't study these viruses and take steps, we don't have a vaccine, we don't have treatments for it, it could be a real problem, and we need to ask ourselves, are we prepared if something like that, if we started having cases show up in the United States? You know, we tend to think about these infections that occur in African countries as not a big concern to us, but look what happened with Ebola. Look what happened with monkeypox. They have a way of making their way over to the United States.
So how concerned should we be about this Marburg virus right now?
I don't think we should be highly concerned. Obviously, if you're traveling over there, then obviously you should be concerned. And I probably wouldn't recommend it right now. But what we should be concerned about is not the Marburg virus or the avian influenza mm-hmm. virus per se. I think what we should be concerned about is that we just have been going through a pandemic. We've already recognized many failures in our response. And one would hope that our federal and state governments are now trying to figure out what are the lessons learned and how do we prepare better. And unfortunately, while some of that may certainly be going on, of course, what you and I are hearing about is not what are we going to do to prepare. And you remember, Gemma, we were just talking a couple of weeks ago about shortages of antibiotics and cold medicines for children. We're not prepared, but yet we're spending a lot of time talking about stuff in the state and the federal legislatures that I'm not sure really impact our society to the extent that pandemics do. And I'm not hearing any planning going on there. Mm.
So I want to turn to a recent study. This was published this week in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And the study says that there are 5 to 6 factors that could help someone from getting long COVID. So can we talk a little bit about this, Dr. Pate?
Sure.
Because really what they're finding is that a healthy lifestyle pre-infection is associated with a lower risk of COVID-19 symptoms that lasted 4 weeks or longer. So first off, I guess, you know, they're pretty typical lifestyle things that we hear about all the time.
Well, that's right. And of course, if you are in better health before getting infected with almost anything, you are likely to have better outcomes. And certainly we've seen a correlation between things like obesity, diabetes, hypertension, other things, and the risks for severe COVID. And of course, your risks for long COVID are higher if you get severe COVID. So those are positive factors. But I would caution a couple things. Number one, that study was generally conducted in white middle-aged women. We don't know that that will apply to younger women, to women of other ethnicities, to men. Second is that is certainly well documented. We know there are plenty of people who were in peak physical condition, athletic, young and active, and they've still gotten long COVID. So clearly, if I had my preference, I would want anybody who's going to get infected to please be in the best possible health they can before they get infected. But we have to understand that's not a guarantee that you won't get long COVID, but it certainly will help reduce your chances, at least if you're a middle-aged white woman, and we'll take that. That's good. We need to study this more. We know that we're learning so much more about long COVID and the many different mechanisms by which it may occur. And so these are not going to be enough to prevent you from getting long COVID, but anything that we can do to lower the risk is going to be good. So certainly we want to encourage healthy lifestyles for everyone.
Okay, right. And I think you're right. Like, take it with a little bit of caution just because of the group that they studied with that. I want to get to a question from Mary, who lives in Kenyon County. Now, she and her husband just got COVID. They had managed to evade it until the middle of last month. She is 69. Her husband is 73. They did take Paxlovid beginning on day three, Dr. Pate. She said she felt better, but then they rebounded and they felt sick and they tested positive for well over 2 weeks. She said this is in spite of being fully vaccinated, including a regular booster and a bivalent booster. So her question is this: I had assumed at this point we would have some robust immunity, at least for the rest of the winter. Then I started hearing more about the Kraken variant. What are the odds that this was, or our vaccination status, and this was or wasn't the new variant? And if it was not, are we now still just as vulnerable for this super infectious new variant? She said she was really surprised that they got as sick as they did.
Yeah. How long ago did they get infected, Gemma?
Mid-January.
Okay. Well, it's harder to tell mid-January if they got the Kraken subvariant. For those of you that don't know what the Kraken is, that's a nickname that has been given to the newest variant that we've been discussing on this show called XBB.1.1. So in January, our levels were a lot lower of XBB.1.1, but it was on the rise. So it's certainly possible they got it, but we were also still having a lot of other variants. So it'd be pretty hard to tell. If they got it just recently, then I would say yes, very good chance, because that variant has increased significantly to now become dominating in most parts of the country. So I would say it would be much more likely. So I can't really tell, and there's not going to be a way for her to know. So they do need to presume that they still could be susceptible to reinfection. We do have good news. There was a recent study that we thought the risk for reinfection with these new variants was going to be much higher than it is. And we certainly are seeing a lot of reinfections. However, a recent Omicron infection, which Kraken is one type of Omicron, any of these Omicron infections, it looks like it does significantly reduce the chances, but it won't prevent you from getting reinfected. So they still need to be careful. And also the fact that they got infected and were so symptomatic, it does not mean they didn't have some immune protection from their vaccines and all. In fact, we know the recent studies from the bivalent vaccine show significant reduction
compared to if they've gotten the regular booster, that monovalent booster or no booster, that it was a significant protection against severe disease and hospitalization. So, and death. So the fact that they survived, and especially at their age and didn't have to go to the hospital, they can thank their good practices and their vaccine for that. But the problem is, it's just at this point, these new variants are escaping the immune protections against infection. So people can still get infected. So I'm glad they're doing fine. The fact that they had the Paxlovid rebound is of no concern. It obviously will be concerning to them, but for their long-term health, not a concern. Take care, be careful going forward, but I'm glad they have gotten boosted and did reasonably well with this infection.
And one last question before we let you go today, Dr. Pate. William literally just wrote in during the program, and he said his 73-year-old wife tested positive for COVID Sunday. He tested positive today. He's 76. So he says, my question is, we are now both positive. So how likely is it, being in the same house, we're going to reinfect one another? She's on Paxlovid. I'm going to start today. He says their symptoms are moderate, but they're different. So is it likely they caught different variants?
Well, it's certainly possible just because there's a lot of variants out there right now. However, I would think statistically, it's most likely that one got it from the other. Although I have found after 42 years of marriage, it's not good to point fingers. So I would just take it and not try to assign blame. But I would say most likely they have the same variant. It's not 100% sure. They could have different. But the most important thing is that they're both taking the Paxlovid. That is the most important thing they can do right now to ensure they don't get more severely ill. And so just take care of each other. And especially having just gotten past Valentine's Day, note to self, don't blame your spouse.
Very good advice. As always, Dr. Pate, it's really good to have you on the show and to talk more about public health and where we are. So really appreciate your time.
My pleasure. Take care, Gemma.
You too. We've been talking with Dr. David Pate. Remember, if you have questions about COVID-19 or any other public health issues, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Race might be a hot topic right now, but for so many of us, talking about race is nothing new. On the Code Switch podcast from NPR, we go beyond the headlines and we go deep. Listen now.